Everyone has a story to tell. What's yours? You're listening to Around the World with Dan Perry. Do you enjoy hearing tales of world adventure? Would you like travel advice from those who know the road well? Maybe you want to embark on a journey of your own, and you just need a bit of motivation to get started. You'll find all of that and more on Around the World with Dan Perry.
Such a beautiful afternoon today here in Beijing, China. I really think if you plan to visit China, you want to come out here to at least to the northern part, to this region, April is your month. It's so nice here. January, February, March, it's cold, it's gloomy. Sometimes the pollution can get pretty high. And by June, July, it's just miserably hot. So April and maybe even May, it's just perfect. It's really windy today. The skies are blue and clear. There's flowers everywhere. Everything's blooming. Just a fantastic time of year to be here. Anyway, I just got done with my chat with today's guest, Gigi Wang. She's from Hong Kong, but she's done a lot of traveling in her life. She lived for quite a long time in Sydney, Australia, and now she lives in New York. So we talked about her home and various homes, I guess, for a long time. And we also talked about a trip that she did a few years back. And that trip has some stuff in common with what Katie and I plan to do this summer. It starts out with the Trans-Siberian Railway from Beijing to Moscow. Now, Katie and I want to go the opposite direction from Moscow to Beijing. So I learned quite a bit about this trip and got some good advice from her. And she also went to some very little traveled places and very interesting countries, Iran and Kurdish Iraq, or North Kurdistan, they call it. And you're going to learn more about that region of the world during this show. This is a really interesting episode, guys. So thanks for tuning in, and let's get to my talk with Gigi Wang. So did you go to the Forbidden City yesterday?
Yes, I did. It was beautiful. The weather was good. And I actually went there 8:15.
In the morning?
Yes. Just to get through the security check and make sure that I could actually get a ticket and get in, you know, just to try and prevent the crowd. But, you know, there are a lot of like local mainlanders that travel inter-provinces
yes.
to see Forbidden City.
And it was Sunday, so that's probably their busiest day, I think.
Oh, yes. But, and I had the audio guide.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah, I basically, well, what I was told when they sell the ticket, they told me Mandarin, well, the Chinese Mandarin, the Chinese languages are cheaper compared to the foreign languages. It's like it's $20, 20 yuan, uh-huh. whereas foreign languages, like 40. So I took the Mandarin one.
They charge twice as much
yes.
for English.
And it's more detail. Yeah, they told me like...
The Chinese one's more detailed or the...
The Mandarin one.
Oh,
compared
okay.
to Cantonese or other dialects yeah. or languages. So I used the Mandarin one.
And how did you do with Mandarin?
Oh, it was good. It's great.
Your Mandarin's really good then?
Yeah. I completely understand it. It's very thorough. And it's easy to navigate. It's unlike the museums in US or Europe, which you have to like press. Basically, it's automatically detect when you're at that palace.
Oh, it knows where you are.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. And I bought like a 5 yuan like map. Basically, it's like the local selling it to me. It basically tells me where to go first and
good.
Where to
yeah.
not to go. So it's pretty good. It's like I actually went everywhere. Yeah, I actually did
really?
Everything.
Did
yeah.
you spend the whole day there then?
Well, I spent from like 8:30 till like 1-ish. And then I went to the... Jingshan
yeah, Jingshan Park.
Park. Yeah.
Right.
I did.
What did you
advice.
Think of it?
It was good. I overlooked the whole place, and because I know it was like a the weather was good, so it's clear. Right. So I felt like, even though I was so tired, but I felt like, well, I should make it there.
Good.
While,
good.
Like, the weather is good. So it was pretty good. I actually went to Forbidden City, like, 23 or 24 years ago. Actually, yeah. To Beijing, like, overall. At that time, there weren't any, like little touristy stuff like Wangfujing.
Okay, that's still there, Wangfujing.
Yeah, and then the others, like all the Wudong, are not like, the Wudong are not like well-maintained. Now, yeah. I think the government actually spent more money into like stuff.
Yes.
And I think the Forbidden City has been like well-kept rather than before. Right. Yeah, before it's pretty...
Oh, it was kind of old and run down at the time?
Yeah, Huh. And some of the palaces, they didn't have money, so they didn't do anything about it.
Oh, I didn't know this.
Yeah.
I heard there was a Starbucks in the Forbidden City for a while, and they took it out because people complained.
Oh, yeah.
Because they didn't want, like, this modern capitalist thing, like, from the West to be in the Forbidden City in China.
I think so. But then afterwards, I think what they... The newer, like, younger generation, like, the my generation, I'm in my mid-30s. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, a lot of, like, Beijing people at that generation, they tend to, when you look at Hudong, those cafes, they tend to mix it, the East meets West, and make it more, like, hipster, like, kind of like cool, you know.
The Hutongs, you mean, or the
Hutong cafes? There's the tiny cafes, which they weren't exist back then in the 20 odd years ago. Likewise, the Forbidden City, there are no souvenirs, just boring souvenirs, like nothing basically.
It's so weird. Like yesterday, Katie and I were walking around because it was such a beautiful day. It was just like perfect temperature and the clear skies. So my wife Katie and I went for a walk through some of the Hutongs, and we went through some of these hipster areas. It's so weird, the mixture of people you can see. Like, you can see old Chinese people right next to, like, young Chinese hipsters
and
foreigners who are eating pizza, and all of them together.
Yeah, and I tried their coffee, you know, like, a few cafes, like, try their coffee. Not bad. Not bad at all. There's this vibe of, like... the westernized ideas, but then they try to make it the China. They actually reinvented it to make it more Beijing style, like incorporating like their own cultural elements in it.
Yeah, that's which is cool. That versus like Shanghai is more just Western. Have you been to Shanghai?
Yes, I was in Shanghai. Actually in December.
Yeah, oh, okay.
On Boxing Day, I was there, like on the 26th of December last year. So, likewise, I haven't, well, Shanghai, I'm not, well, yeah, I kind of never did the touristy stuff, but then it was, if you ask me, it's more hipster here in Beijing.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, rather than Shanghai. It's hipster, but then there's still, like, not a lot. I actually went to Huangfujing's, like, bookstore. You know, there's, like, a five-story bookstore, Chinese bookstore.
Oh, right, yeah.
I read Chinese. So in Beijing, I feel people are more cultural, and they more like literature.
Yeah,
like, rather than Shanghai. Shanghai is like a city that you go in for work, you know. It's like a...
Shopping.
Like a
working.
A revolving door. I didn't do any shopping in Shanghai. I didn't go to any shopping centers in Beijing. Uh-huh. But I just feel it's more cultural here.
It is. Yeah, don't get me wrong. There's lots of shopping in Beijing. There's lots of malls if you want that.
Yeah.
But if you want, you can go and see the Hutongs, and you can see how life was a long time ago.
Yeah.
I like that a lot about Beijing.
Just Shanghai, I think it's probably because it wasn't the capital, So they don't have a lot of like cultural or historical stuff that actually revolve to the new generation style of like cafes or places for young people to hang out. And yeah. I realized really a lot of people, they read every cafes I went to here in like Hutong, there are Chinese books. Yeah.
And not in Shanghai, not so much?
No.
Huh.
Yeah, people, and a lot of people are reading. Not playing their like their smartphones or whatsoever, but reading, really.
Oh, reading actual books, too.
Exactly.
Yeah, you still see a little bit of that.
Yeah.
Although smartphones are everywhere, too.
Yeah.
But I like how there's... This was a total surprise for me moving here. There's this alternative scene here. There's a punk rock scene that's pretty big here. There's
yeah.
all this artwork that's like trendy. Yep. And you know, it's not like all business here like it is in Shanghai. It just seems more edgy in Beijing.
Yeah, I think because there's still like parts of it where you can, I think it's bigger. And space wise, it's bigger. And because there are still a lot, it's usually in a city, it's like where they have like important historical like palaces or temples surrounding it. It's like a busy hub, and it's there where the old villages are always like surrounding the palace. If you realize like whether it's in Europe, in Moscow, anywhere, it's always there's a palace or a temple, a big temple, a big palace, and that's where all the villages are nearby. And those are where you can have the room to actually make the change to accommodate this generation, like with new ideas.
Hmm.
Do you get what I mean?
Like, I think I get what you mean.
Yeah it can be there. Is a movement for a bit of change, revolve, not change, not completely change, but revolve or grow from it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But still having the roots and the element of the historical part of it.
Yeah, the city totally feels like that too. Like it's maintaining its roots.
Yeah, like you
at
said.
At least
like,
for now.
Yeah.
The change is inevitable.
Yeah.
So you've lived like an interesting life. I mean, you come from Hong Kong? And right.
Well, I was born in Hong Kong, but then when I was 16, I moved to Sydney. Moved to Sydney, Australia.
Right.
So I spent like 13 years there. Yeah, and then moved to Hong Kong for work, and then work brought me to New York.
Yeah. So now you live in New York.
Yeah, New York. But. Because of my career, I tend to travel a lot. It's usually US, China, and Hong Kong.
Oh, what is your career then?
I'm in like real estate finance. So basically, I used to work for a Chinese bank. Well, actually, I just resigned like 3 months ago. So because the Chinese government or the Chinese investors, they have this go-out policy that they invest overseas, and it's mainly US. So I just follow my bank, like because it's a state-owned, 100% state-owned bank I used to work for. So basically, I look after those like Chinese clients overseas.
Okay. And yeah. Do you help translate for them, or do you help look for property, or do you do for them?
So these clients are mainly like state-owned or first-tier like developers, which they have already footprint in US, Australia, or UK. So basically what I do is just doing the financing, lending them money. That's it, to do their projects.
Ah, got it.
Yeah, so it's just a relationship management. So when it comes to Chinese being overseas, they tend to be very aggressive.
In business, you mean?
In business.
Yeah.
And it's like they are willing and not afraid of being out there. because I think it comes back to the Chinese history, about what Chinese has gone through, especially the ones in their the people in their 40s and their 50s. They've probably gone, or even 60s, like 60-year-old, I mean, like 40 to 60-year-old, they probably, Chinese has gone through a lot of like internal and external wars, warfare, as in like you've got the Qing Dynasty, after that you've got the invasion by the Japanese, and then you've got the internal conflicts between the Kuomintang and the Communist Party, and then you have World War, like, and then the Japanese coming in. So they're constantly in an unstable environment for the Chinese.
Right.
So they believe if they have the opportunity, they will try all their best to do anything they can. So in business-wise, they are very aggressive, and they are not afraid of anything because they just have to seize the opportunity because they know, because in their mindset and in their background, they haven't been through any stability, as in the government to them is not, in their mindset, it's not reliable.
Okay.
So they have to do it all themselves. And they know, for a start, they started with nothing when they were young. They were poor.
They especially the older people.
Exactly. Yeah. Even in the 40s, in the late 40s, people in the late 40s, they said, when we were young, we have nothing to eat. So when we have the opportunity to go out there overseas, we'll just grasp anything. And they put in their hard work and the energy and effort to do it. Well, in this way, I think we should appreciate that they're courageous and being adventurous. But there's still like a difference of mindset between the Chinese and the international world.
Yeah, what you're saying makes a lot of sense to me. I haven't thought of it like that.
Yeah.
Like China has undergone some really tumultuous times.
Yeah.
200 years,
recently. I didn't know that because I'm from Hong Kong, and you know Hong Kong is a colony under the British government. So I get to know all these by talking to my clients who, like, in their management position, they're now in the late 40s and early 50s.
Yeah.
So they've gone through the communist movement when they were young and then visualized and experienced the changes, how China being opened in the late 80s and early 90s, you know.
Right.
So, yeah, it's an interesting the way they actually see it. They see Chinese as a great country. Some actually admit that there is still like a big gap being in the international platform because of the mindset and the regulations.
Sure, but it makes total sense that if you grow up poor and you suddenly get money once you're a little older,
yeah,
you fight to keep it and you'll fight to make more. It makes total
exactly.
sense.
But China has been accelerating too fast that in some way we as bankers and like people who has been educated overseas and worked in China and lawyers, they know that it's not sustainable what the Chinese government is as in the platform for investment. That's why all these Chinese investors actually go out, because they find the US or the Australian platforms are more transparent and more stable.
Yeah.
Because I mean, like, China has been accelerating too fast. Now they are now trying to, which is the government is trying hard to fix up the fundamentals. I mean, you've got the hardware, but what about the software?
Yeah. Yeah, someone once used the analogy for a different purpose, but in China, to me, of like trying to build an airplane while it's already flying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
it does feel like that a lot.
Yeah.
Things are moving very fast.
Yeah, so I have been acting as a bridge between the East and the West.
Got it, okay.
So that's why I know the Chinese mindset, and sometimes, like, I mean, this Chinese real estate developers or investors, they have joint venture partners, the U.S., and dealing with the U.S. banks. And the U.S. bankers was like, oh, what are they doing? You know, like, how come they think such a way? You know, what do you... they just don't get it, because for them, they thought it's the Chinese way. Everything can be done through relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's right. A very Chinese mindset. But you just have to kind of like just to do their way. Like, they're not even used to using emails. Like, they use like their own software, WeChat, like chatting.
Oh, yeah.
Messages.
Email is so outdated here.
I know.
It's
yeah.
It's just like this ancient technology. No one uses it.
Yeah. So, you know, like, for like US like professionals or like corporate bankers, like, they was just like, oh my god, like, how we are not going to communicate in emails, like, those messengers, we don't even have it, you know,
right,
like
right.
Yeah, why is that? Like, you know, like, it's a whole difference, like a space, you know. They're like living in a different world. Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, the cultural differences are big, very big, and it's good we have people like you who have lived in both worlds and can
yeah.
not translate the language, but translate the culture.
Yeah, and
between
mindset.
Different societies and mindsets, right?
Yeah, because Chinese language itself, it's actually very, very complicated.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's even you can pronounce, you can read, you can understand, but the words, like for one meaning, for one word, they have like different sorts of phrases to describe it or use words. And the way they use it, you can see whether whether it's being positive or negative. It's quite a sophisticated language when they put it into like phrases as well. Like, they're like, we use like words in like four, we call it like the four words together, like a
right,
phrase.
Right, like your
yeah.
Poems or
exactly
aphorisms.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of these ancient Chinese sayings.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's hard to translate. It's really...
Very hard. And I think for me, studying the language, I've studied Chinese for a while, the Mandarin, I mean. Becoming kind of intermediate level wasn't that hard for me. Like, just getting to the point where I can have a basic conversation with somebody, but getting into anything detailed is
yeah,
so
literature.
Hard. Literature, even just reading a sign, a lot of the times in Chinese they'll use two or three characters to make
yeah.
a word.
Yeah.
But if there's four characters in a row, maybe characters one is one word mm-hmm. and then two and three are another word.
Yeah, exactly.
And maybe it's one and two are one word and three and four are one word.
Yeah.
And there's no spaces between them to show, like, which is which.
Yeah.
It's really complicated.
Yeah, so even... Say if you ask me to write a letter, okay, a letter like a letter or write an essay, I'm sure there are definitely like wrong characters. You know,
yeah,
it's always hard to write because you forget because how to write that word, you just forget. But when you know how to read it, but you just sometimes forget.
Yeah, I can totally empathize with that. I can recognize or read
yeah.
a few hundred characters,
yeah.
but if you ask me to write them, it's other than the very basic ones, it's very hard for me.
Oh, yeah.
But reading is much easier.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I think the culture here, because people are using phones so much, I think a lot of people are forgetting how to write.
Oh, yes,
because they just
exactly.
don't use that skill.
Exactly.
You can type on a phone very quickly using
yeah.
pinyin or...
Strokes, yeah.
Taiwan uses strokes.
Yeah.
Does Hong Kong use strokes?
Yeah, I use strokes, yeah.
Yeah, most mainland Chinese use pinyin.
Yeah.
You can type very fast and efficiently with pinyin or whatever the technique.
Yeah, yeah.
But you don't actually write out the characters that way.
Oh, yeah, I write all the characters on the phone, like strokes.
Oh, you,
yeah.
oh, you write the
phone,
whole thing.
Yeah,
okay.
The phone detects it. Yeah, they
yeah,
can detect
okay.
it. So it kind of helped me. But the way how you learn Chinese, all you can... do to improve your Chinese is reading, reading, and reading. There's nothing you can do.
Right.
Yeah, because reading helps you to familiarize the character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is a fascinating language, though. So it's I'm glad I came here, and I'm glad I got the chance to study it.
Yeah.
And whether or not I push it up to become more advanced. I don't know. Depends on where we end up. But it's been a really good experience just learning this very different language than my own.
You know, I have some friends in Hong Kong. They actually, Hong Kong, that has never lived abroad, just in Hong Kong.
Oh, okay.
They find it hard to actually adapt to the mainland Chinese culture as well, and their mindset.
Right.
Yeah.
I've only spent a few days in Hong Kong, so I don't know it all of that well. But as soon as I went there, I could see it's like, oh yeah, this is definitely different than mainland China. Just the people talk differently, and it's just little things just seem very different.
Mindset-wise.
Mindset's different. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and obviously the language is different.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's just a dialect called Cantonese.
Ah, okay. Well, but if you never study Mandarin Chinese and your native language is Cantonese, can you understand anything in Mandarin hearing it?
Yes.
You can?
You can. Because, why? Because back in my generation, when we were in 16, 17, there's something called karaoke. So karaoke and Chinese pop, they listen to Mandarin songs. So when you read the lyrics and when you hear the music and when you sing it, you kind of pick it up. And also because we can read the characters, even though in Hong Kong we use the traditional version,
right.
In China we use the simplified version. Do you know why they use simplified Chinese?
I do, but go ahead and explain.
Well, back in the communist day, when the communist leader, that's my understanding, wants to increase the number of people being literate, okay, and easier to learn, they've invented something called simplified Chinese.
Yeah, and I've even heard they had almost a contest. Submit your ideas for what should we do with this?
And
some people suggested an alphabet, like an English alphabet, or what eventually became pinyin.
Yeah.
I heard one guy invented a brand new alphabet, but it didn't get accepted.
Yeah.
But so they took a few hundred very common characters and made them more simple.
Yeah, and because back in those days, China is still an agricultural, not yet industrialized yet, so people are not educated. So in order to have a more standardized form of communication of a communication tool, they use simplified Chinese.
Right. Yeah. This would have been early 1950s, I think.
Yep.
Yeah, so and that's only mainland China. So if you go to Hong Kong or Taiwan, then they use
the traditional. And even if you go to say the Forbidden City, when you see the poems, they're still all traditional Chinese.
Oh, right. Any sort of temple, there's going to always be traditional.
Yeah, the history before the Qing Dynasty, it's all traditional Chinese.
Still is. Well, what was interesting for me, being in Hong Kong, I couldn't understand anything that people were saying. But if I went to a restaurant, I could read a lot of the food.
Yeah.
I could kind of get an idea of what it was in Chinese, in the characters.
Yeah, it's quite different to Mandarin. But then we kind of because we listen to and because there are now a lot of mainlanders, and we kind of have one or two lessons a week in school to learn Mandarin. It's called 普通话. 普通话. So, we kind of pick simple words. And then nowadays, because the Hong Kong economy is kind of linked to the Chinese economy in a way. So a lot of business are conducted in China and people traveling in China. And a lot of Chinese people travel to Hong Kong for shopping, for anything. So being getting into a job knowing Mandarin, it's a must in a way.
Yeah.
Nowadays in Hong Kong.
So it's becoming more and more integrated with China.
Yeah, but then, there are movements in Hong Kong that they they insist they should keep traditional Chinese and the characters and Cantonese.
Okay.
They don't. I mean, there is some kind of. I mean, Hong Kong people of my age, which has gone through the British colonization, and then being kind of like influenced by the Chinese government, that transition, we kind of like lost our identity, as in who we are, truly are. So they try to call themselves as Hong Kong, and they differentiate themselves being someone from Hong Kong and from someone from China. So when you ask me or anyone in Hong Kong, oh, are you from China? No, I'm from Hong Kong.
Right.
But Hong Kong is still technically part of China.
Yeah, but it's that cultural identity.
Exactly.
And language is a very important part of that, part of one's identity.
Yeah, and because the Hong Kong government tries to actually have a more push in the simplified Chinese in Hong Kong, and it got heavily kind of pushed back by the community.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm interested in more than just Hong Kong. I want to know about your travels. You're telling me about this really long trip you did a few years ago. That sounded really interesting. Where did you go?
Well, I did the Trans-Siberian, Europe, and then all the way to Iran, Iraqi Kurdistan, and then I stopped.
Where did you start then?
Beijing.
Ah, okay. So, and you got the train from here.
Yeah, there's a station in the Beijing station where you got on the Trans-Siberian route. I started there. And then I think the second stop was like Gobi Desert.
Yeah.
And then Ulaanbaatar.
Okay.
And then Ulaanbaatar is the capital of Mongolia. And then Siberia and then Moscow. I think that's the first phrase I call it, the Trans-Siberian. Took around like 3 or 4 weeks. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Katie and I plan to go the same route but the other direction. Later this year. So,
like which from
starting from Moscow to Beijing, maybe in August.
Okay. From Beijing, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, well, we'll continue after Beijing, but that's the first phase, like you had your first phase. How was it for you?
I actually did it with my ex-boyfriend back then, so that was my first kind of first trip, because we did that trip because it's moving from Sydney. It's in a period between moving to from Sydney to Hong Kong. So we thought like let's take a career break.
Yeah. So good idea.
Yeah, and in Sydney you can't travel because it's not as easy as being in Hong Kong or in Asia, because Australia is just nowhere like down
right.
there. Yeah. So starting from Beijing. It was fun, the first phrase, because not knowing, I haven't done any backpacking, and it's kind of like a semi-backpacking, so there were uncertainties and worries, you know, the first time, but then it turns out to be great. I mean, like, especially being on a train, so say like from Beijing to Gobi Desert, it's like I think a day and a half on the train.
Yep.
But then they have like stops as in like every 2 or 3 hours or 5 hours they will stop the train on like a certain like station in China, but you can get off the train but you can't get off the platform.
Yeah, it just stops for a few minutes.
Sometimes half an hour.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, or to an hour, so you can buy some food on the station, like local station, and you get to eat some local snacks, which was nice, because there will be like hawkers like selling stuff, knowing that there's a train stopping. So so it was good, and we actually did the second class. I remember like foreigners, they either do like first class or the second class.
Yeah.
Third class, it's
Was that in China too? Was it called second class, or was
second class? I think it's called second class.
Interesting, because usually the trains here are like hard sleeper or soft sleeper, like run wo or wo pu.
Okay, it's a soft sleepers, I think, because in one carriage you've got like two bunk beds.
Yeah, two sets of bunk beds.
Yeah,
right.
Two sets of bunk beds and. It's actually very comfortable. No air conditioning, but it's fine when the train is running. It's all fine. And people that gets on that train are either, like, in between jobs or people, teachers, mainly. Teachers, academics, or retirees.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So it's like foreigners. Locals, they'll just do the third or fourth class, yeah.
Ah, right. But then you got to Mongolia, and does the train, you have to get off the train and get on a new train in Mongolia?
Yes. Because, like, say, we actually get off at Gobi Desert. So when we get off, what we did was, like, we had, like, a horse riding camping, like, trip.
Well, so, that's fun.
Yeah, we booked, I mean, like, the tour company booked it for us, you know, and we found that, okay, it's reasonable. So it's basically like horse riding in like national parks and then like camping. But I mean, they've got all the camping gears, you know, and those like Mongolian traditional tents, you know.
The yurts?
Yurts, they call it. But it's all, so you get off for for a few days, I remember. And then you get on back again. So the whole trip is planned. And we book through this tour company. So they have someone. It's like in any stop, they'll have someone, like a local person, who can speak English and pass you the ticket. Make sure that you get it on time.
Right, so they can help you with it then.
Exactly. So you kind of know your contact. And in each place, you've got a local contact.
Yeah, that's good. Especially since it was your first trip. That's kind of scary going to a new place.
No, because in Mongolia, in we'll say like Gobi Desert, it's like out of nowhere. And people actually speak Korean. There are lots of Korean there in Mongolia.
Really?
And they speak Korean.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Fluent Korean and Mandarin. So not English, yeah. So... Yeah, so that's the reason why, I guess, yeah.
So it makes it a little bit easier for you.
Yeah.
And then, so how long did you stay in Mongolia then?
Ulaanbaatar, like another few days. But the interesting thing is like getting on those train, when you get back on the train, then when you get back on, say like you stay in Mongolia for a few days and then you get onto the train that goes to Siberia, they have the Mongolian like train, so everyone like the train, the one who manages the each carriage, it's like a Mongolian. So I remember that lady, she doesn't speak English at all.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you just have to.
Or even Mandarin, not really, even Mandarin.
So total language barrier then.
Yeah.
I guess they're probably used to it though, since it's an international train, right? A lot of foreigners on the train?
Yeah, there are, but I can tell there are some foreigners, they are struggling, because, I mean, a lot of them, like old or retired people who hasn't been used to traveling,
sure,
and or they might not have been to Asia, and then like getting used to the weather, the food, and it's sometimes hard, you know?
Sure, that can be hard.
Yeah, but... Being on the train, it's you get to meet a lot of people.
Yeah.
And like say, you can see the cultural changes from Mongolia, and then you go to Siberia, like which is part of Russia. Yeah. They are Russians, but not too Russians. Why? I feel like people in Siberia, they're more friendly than the Russians.
Okay.
Yeah, well, than the one in the Moscow.
That's a pretty low bar. Russians are not exactly known for being friendly.
Exactly. Yeah. That's why when you meet people in Siberia, they are very friendly and helpful, and just food, it's slightly different as well. Like, yeah. They eat a lot of fish.
Oh, okay.
In Siberia, there are a lot of fish.
Fish from the lake?
Yeah, from the lake.
Ah,
Lake Baikal.
From Lake Baikal, okay.
Yeah, so...
Did you go up to Lake Baikal then?
Yes, I did. So from Irkutsk, it's like, I think, hour drive to Lake Baikal. And in Lake Baikal, you can do a lot of hiking.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah. But, okay, this was what we were not warned. So there are horse flies.
Oh, right.
They're quite big.
Sure.
They're quite big. And they actually bite you, even through your jacket and clothes. I wear like a windbreaker, and still they bite through
your windbreaker.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah, and it's not one or two. It's like 50 of them.
Yeah.
At the same time.
Yeah. Those northern climates are so unforgiving. I mean,
but
you've
it's
got
summer.
Winter's
summer.
Like
exactly.
Horrible.
Yeah.
Winter's
yeah, exactly.
Just so cold.
Exactly.
And then do
yeah.
you get relief in the summer? No, you get flies.
Exactly. It's just in like when you do your hiking, so just beware of that.
Yeah, yeah. I'll have to keep that in mind. That's good advice.
Yeah. We didn't know that. Like all they told us is just, make sure you're all covered, long pants, and socks, covered.
Yeah.
And they didn't warn us about the horse fly, not until we were there.
Right.
Horse flies. Yeah.
They can drive you insane, too, with the noise.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All day.
And they're big. They're not small, tiny flies. And they're scary. I've never seen such, big flies, you know.
Okay,
I'll
keep that in mind. So how was the rest of the trip across Russia?
And then, on the train, you don't get to shower.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you get off every couple days?
Well, you probably have, no showers for 2 days. It's okay. I can manage that because it's just on the train and it's pretty dry. You don't sweat. You know what I mean? But sometimes if you get off it's on the train platform, they have, clean bathroom where you can clean yourself as in because it's only the first class they have showers.
Okay.
And if you want to use if you pay them you could use them, but even if you pay sometimes they don't. So we were lucky from Siberia to the Moscow bit because it's 3 days on the train, and we just want to use the shower, so we pay. But it's not a big deal,
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I rode across Australia once on a train, too.
But Australia is pretty... I haven't done the train in Australia. How was it?
It was just what I wanted. It was nothing.
Okay.
Which is kind of... I've never been somewhere so remote. Mm-hmm. And in the middle, you stop at this little old... used to be a little town, now it's
in the middle of the
ghost town.
Australia.
Yeah,
it's
middle
Bear
of
land,
the desert.
Yeah.
Right. And every direction is just flat, all the way to the horizon.
Yeah.
And it says the next town is 500 miles away or something.
Yeah,
something
yeah.
insane.
Yeah.
And you just realize how out there you are.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I wanted.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it was basically a couple of days of just looking at nothing.
Oh,
which,
yeah.
Maybe some people would think it's boring, but for me it was wow, this country is really big and there's not many people here.
Yeah, because the Australians, or we call the Aussies, they live around this coastal area.
Right, almost everybody does.
Yeah, yeah. Basically the weather it's more forgiving. Well, it's very, because it's too dry in the...
So dry and so hot.
Yeah, the outback is just too dry and... hot.
Yeah, a couple of guys got on the train that were sheep farmers or shepherds.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so this train stopped just for them. The whole train did.
Yeah.
And these ranchers have ranches the size of an American state, like the size of Massachusetts.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And just one guy owns it all, and it's just all sheep.
Yeah.
Or whatever they're little animals. And they would go, and so they told us they were going to go live on this ranch for the next, like, 3 months.
Oh, yeah.
And there's, like, 6 guys in this entire thing. And, ooh, that's got to get lonely.
Oh, that's why in Australia, they have, like, TV shows, like, farmers meet a, like, TV shows for farmers to try and meet a like, I think the TV shows is, like, Farmer Wants a Wife. So, yeah. Basically, they have, like, all these eligible farmers, lonely men, who can't find, like, females because there are basically no females, like
there
you say.
There just aren't any, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, that was, like, a funny show. Yeah, really, yeah. But
right.
They've got, like, really eligible farmers, yeah. Like, good-looking, like, honk, we call it, like.
Sure. Well, these two guys that I met were really young. They were probably like 18.
Yeah.
And it was their first time, and I was thinking, man, I wonder how long they're going to last.
Yeah, and it's pretty, like, you can hear that, like, Aussie accent.
Yeah, the real Outback accent comes out, thick accent.
Yeah.
Right. Anyway, I didn't shower on that train. That's why I brought it up, too. And it was okay.
It's okay. I mean, but then for me, because it was the first time, like, 3 days of no shower, it's fine. Yeah, you know what I mean? It's pretty, and then once you get to Moscow, then it's like a completely different, like, people are not friendly.
Yeah.
No, they're just like, I think it's not that they're not friendly, I think it's because we don't understand their language, and also because the accent or, you know.
I have had people tell me that they seem very cold.
Yeah, exactly.
Once you get to know them, once they let you in, then they're super friendly. But to strangers, they're not friendly
at
all.
And they always have, like, a few guys, like, big guys standing together. You don't know what they are talking about. Like, probably that's it. But then, it's not.
Whereas in China, just people are so outgoing and nice, and they always want to talk to me. Everybody does.
Oh, yeah.
And always smiling.
Yeah.
Always saying hi.
Yeah, they basically like the Western world, you know, like everyone has this dream about American dream, okay? It's interesting. So Moscow is just different, and but then we actually took a train from Moscow to Finland.
Oh, okay.
At that time, it's called, the train, I think it's called Allegra, yeah. It's a new train. And, okay, from Moscow going to Finland, again, it's a completely different culture, again, because Finland is all, like, minimalism, you know, simplistic, the IKEA, you know, vibe, and very, like, clean, you know, like, So it was nice. But I think the best thing was to take the ferry from Finland to Estonia.
Okay.
Yeah, Estonia is like, if you ever like old town, like old towns, like Estonia, those like little old towns are fun. Because you just can grab a bike and just cycle around the old town. It's a small town, but then it's just different, you mean?
Yeah, it sounds great.
Yeah, and those like little old towns are very, you know, Nordic.
Yeah.
So it's like a different culture, and you can actually, it's a really small town and you don't have tall buildings, it's basically old, so you can walk to the top of the church and then just overlook the whole like little town, which is kind of fun, you know, like very cultural. Yeah.
So where did you go after Estonia?
Estonia, I think, okay, and then I lost track. Like, it's like Prague, Austria, Germany.
Okay.
That side,
sure. Well, let's skip ahead then. I don't think we have a lot of time left, so let's...
Yeah.
I think I'm most interested in hearing about Iran and Iraq.
Yeah, in Iraqi Kurdistan. So, mainly we spend most of our time in Iran. So, why did we actually do it, and how did we do it? When we ended up in like kind of like the 6th month of the trip, money's running low, and we just find, let's do something, but we still want to go go on a budget. We still want to go on, so we thought of some cheap countries. So we thought, okay, let's go to, because we were in Turkey, okay?
Sure.
So, and then we thought, like, okay, nearby, where can we go? And then we've got this, like, idea of, let's go to Iran. Yeah, okay.
Well, it's so, right next to Turkey.
Exactly. We thought, like, oh, that's very normal.
Makes sense.
So we actually talked to the Turkish, like, the Turkey people. They said, yep. Oh, you're going to Iran? It's dangerous.
Right.
So do you realize that the Turkish, they don't go to Iran, actually. But we managed to find the Iranian consulate in Istanbul.
Okay.
So we went to the consulate and just... And you've got all these, like, it's all men, you know, in the consulate. Yeah. Female rarely travels. So it's all men doing business in Turkey. So
yeah.
They're in the Iranian consulate. And people just stared at me, you know, like, because it's just like... And we two Asians, like, and especially...
Was your ex-boyfriend also from Hong Kong?
He's a Singaporean.
Oh, okay.
So he lived in Australia for a long time.
But
so
ethnically Chinese.
Yeah, exactly. Right. We can tell, like, from the face, oh,
yeah,
they're Chinese.
Yeah.
All they think is, like, from China, they think.
Yeah.
So we told them, so they asked us, like, in a very stern voice, like, what are you doing in Iran? Oh, holiday. And then he just, like, looked at us, like, with this, like, blank face, oh, holiday? So where are you going to stay? We don't know, you know, like, we don't know. How are you going to get there? By train and ferry. Yeah, we don't even exactly know our...
Sure.
Like, yeah.
The geography and the
map exactly.
And
Yeah. And we actually got the... I think the, like Lonely Planet. Back then, a few years ago, like, there wasn't, like, much on TripAdvisor. You know, not like these days, there's a lot of all these apps, but no. So
yeah.
We rely on Lonely Planet.
Sure.
But Lonely Planet has a very old edition of Iran.
Yeah.
So we thought that, okay. So we just kind of like, okay, good. Just look for what are the basics. Yeah. So you can't book a hotel because there's no internet room booking, nothing.
Wow.
No. You can't actually, they use like a currency called riyals. There's no way you can exchange riyals in anywhere in the world except Iran.
So you have to bring like dollars in, or
yeah,
can you bring
dollars.
Turkish money in?
Dollars. They
Only
just like dollars.
Okay.
They love dollars. That's it. Yeah. There is no credit card. You can't use your credit card.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's nothing. Well, it took us like a month to get the visa. So both of us are Australian, so it's okay. It's not that hard.
Oh, you both have Australian passports.
Exactly.
Okay.
Chinese... It's easy because Chinese actually, they do a lot of business in Iran as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'll go to Iran, talk about Iran culture later on, okay?
Sure.
So, well, the visa took a month, and then we got our visa just 1 hour before our train.
What? 1 hour?
Yeah, exactly. We have to rush to the station, and then, like, and then... I actually wasn't prepared for Iran. So, because women, you need to cover up your hair.
Hijab.
Yeah. You don't have to fully cover, but then you have to cover your arms.
Sure.
And long pants. Yeah. Technically, you should actually have, like, your toes are being covered, like, as well. But I just didn't. Yeah, I just
didn't
know. I just bring my, like, so-called US, we call it flip-flops. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and then, yeah, I had, like, two sets of clothes I bought in Turkey to go to Iran, you know, because I've been traveling in, like, Europe in shorts, you know, and...
Yeah,
you know, like, because summer clothing, you know.
In Turkey, do women cover up?
No.
It's
pretty westernized. And also in Turkey, there are a lot of Russians going to Turkey.
Okay.
So it's... Yeah, they're pretty... So anyway, going to Iran, going on a train, and then it's all locals, okay? Mm. So
and all men?
Oh, no, they're families.
Oh, families.
We
okay.
didn't know that they were Iranians, like, because they didn't cover up, you know?
Mm.
And then when they pass the borders, everyone covers up, and then and we become friends, you know, like the whole train. They're very welcoming. They're very hospitality people, and they have like food. We dance every night. They like dancing. They're not allowed to dance in Iran in the public. No, they're not allowed to dance. Yeah. So they had dancing, music, you know, it was fun, you know. And they basically are very westernized. They speak perfect English, you know.
Sure.
And just going to Iran, and then, well, we didn't book any accommodation. We just have US dollars. Nothing. We bring nothing. So we thought, like, okay, we'll just go to the station and just probably ask, you know, about the hotels or even motels or whatsoever, you know. But, like, these people we met on the train actually offers us to stay at their place.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So, they are nice. I'm still in contact with these people. They're very
nice.
I mean, if you're going, I'm not sure if you can go. I don't know what about U.S. getting an Iranian.
I think still we can. With this Trump travel ban, if that ever goes through, then we're not going to be allowed to.
Yeah. I mean, like,
I think for now we're still allowed to.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was so I'm, so when we arrived, so we just have like, we just basically asked the train station. There's no tourist information, nothing. We just asked around. We managed to get something. And it's during Ramadan.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's during, I'm not sure if you know what's Ramadan.
I do. Well, you can explain.
So basically, it's like 1 month, usually 1 month of the year. You fast between sunrise and sunset.
Right. Fasting meaning no food or drinks.
Yeah,
water even.
No water. No water.
Nothing.
Okay, we felt like, oh my God, how are we going to suffer? Seriously, what about pregnant women? You know, what about kids?
Oh, do they make exceptions in Iran?
I'll finish the story.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And then people, what about people working? You know, because it's like, there's always workers like working, doing like labor work. And we found out that there are like places that cover with like thick curtains. When you open, when you get in, everyone's eating and drinking.
Even Iranians?
Yeah, they're all Iranians. Like, we only met like 10 tourists, like around like the 1 or 2 months of stay in Iran. So it's kind of funny. And we were invited to dinners by strangers every night. Apparently it's okay. So we just turn up and if we don't have dinner plans, we'll go to the restaurant and wait till, because they will switch on the TV and wait for the announcement when the ends, like everyone's like praying, and then we have food and water in front of us. We can't eat because,
That's brutal.
Yeah, and I got like penalized by the religious police, like for having open toes.
Wow.
Yeah, and rolling up my sleeves.
You got fined or what?
No, they just have warnings, and it's and no photos at all in any public transport, like the subway. Oh, by the way, the subway is as good as China.
Really?
Yeah, it's like in Tehran. It's like
very modern.
Modern, clean compared to, you know, New York. it's nothing.
Yeah, New York is so old.
Yeah.
The subway is.
And and we actually attended some underground, okay? It's just parties at young people's place. And all the kids, not the kids, like around, like people around our age, like they have their own ideas. They don't wear hijab. They're just like having vodka.
They're drinking too.
Yeah, exactly. Dancing and DJ mixing.
Damn.
It's like, they want to get out of Iran, but they can't, and they have no choice in their religion. They have to be Muslims.
So interesting how you've given several examples now of people breaking the rules or leaving the country. As soon as they leave the country, the clothes all come off, and how they're only doing the strict rules because they have
government.
To.
Yeah, because of the government, and you know, on the TV, there's no TV show. There's nothing about love. It's about family, about religious beliefs. And all female actors are all covered up in black except the face. You know, even their face are boring.
Right.
Yeah. And they have a lot of, like, it's just like, I guess it's like Northern Korea, where the government keeps on telling people, advertising or doing propaganda about how good they are in
sure.
developing countries and how bad the Western culture is.
Yeah.
The influence.
But it sounds like they kind of have a better understanding of what the outside world is like.
Oh, yeah, because they the younger generation, they still go on Facebook and they have all these like US TV shows, watch MBAs, you know. Still, they have all these, and they try to, even they have like hijabs or cover up, they wear like skinny jeans underneath heels, you know. They still want to be, I mean, because technically Iranian was under kind of Muslim, like quite relatively extreme Muslim after the 80s. I think before that it was still under monarchy. There's a king and queen. They don't have to wear hijabs or like be conservative.
Yeah, I think you're right there. Yeah, I mean, I only know a little bit of that history, but yeah.
But things are cheap, and actually their old towns, like the historical monuments or like sites. Mm-hmm. There's a historical site called Persepolis. It's like an old Asian, all the columns.
Uh-huh.
It's.
Oh, I think I know which one you mean. But there's some, really old civilizations from Iran.
Yeah, but because there's hardly any tourists there, so it's all well preserved.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very well preserved.
Mm. Yeah, I've met three people who have ridden bicycles across Iran,
mm-hmm.
and all of them loved it. They all said the same kind of things you're saying, like people would invite them in all the time, and they'd have dinner and sleep at people's houses, and it was the friendliest, nicest country that they've ever been to. I'm like, wow, Iran, really?
Yeah, it's safe. It's the safest because...
And safe, yeah.
It's strict Muslim, and plus they are actually financing the terrorists, the government. I mean, in there it's good. And we took the bus or like a minibus or van from Iran to Iraqi Kurdistan. So Iraqi Kurdistan is the northern part of Iraq. So the capital is Erbil. Yep.
Erbil?
Yeah.
Is the city?
Erbil, yes. Oh. So it's the capital. It's an autonomous region. So in that region, you don't have to cover up like the Iranians for some reason.
Really?
You don't have to wear a hijab.
Huh.
Yeah, for foreigners. At that time, it was safe, but I think the most interesting part of it, of taking the van from Iran to Iraqi Kurdistan, was like I think I came across a few Taliban girls.
Really?
Huh. Yeah. I suspect because they were all in light blue hijab, and they're all covered in light blue.
Oh, the full burqa?
Yeah, the full burqa and light blue. So what I'm aware of, and when like females are wearing all light blue burqa, they're part of like Taliban. Yeah, I ran into them, it's just using some kind of like toilet, like in the middle of the bus trip, yeah. So I said hi to them, but then I was like trying to be friendly. I thought everyone's friendly, but they're not friendly. But you can tell like through their burqa, like they're looking at me. So I thought like, I said hi, and then...
Yeah. They didn't say hi back or anything?
They didn't say hi back.
Really? That's interesting.
And they were not allowed to talk to me, but you can tell that they really want to reach out.
Maybe they're curious.
Yeah, they're curious. Like, I mean, how could we go there? But back to Iraqi Kurdistan, the landscape is magnificent.
Uh-huh.
They
What's
have
it like?
Like they have river. I forgot the name of that river. They've got a lake, and it's pretty scenic as well. It's more It's only Erbil is the, like, it's just like, Erbil is just like Tehran. It's like a modernized capital, kind of relatively modernized. But then there are other scenic, and they have like, sorry, sometimes the name I forgot. Like, they've got like places like the Grand Canyon, but it's like the Iraqi Kurdistan version of it.
Okay, I'll have to look up pictures of this. I can put some on my website then for people to see.
Yeah. So it's pretty nice. I mean, more in these countries, like, it's all about like mosque, or like old interesting historical sites, but it's more about the culture and the people. It's just meeting the people. I mean, I had like a conversation, sorry, with the I think with an Iraqi girl, like, she's like, I think 20 something. She's very well educated. She's a PhD student. And she asked me, oh, so what do you do on weekends, on Sunday? Do you go to church or temple? I said, no, I don't do any of those. I'm an atheist. And she said, you don't have a religion? How could it be? You know, like, everyone has a religion. No, we just don't. And then I said, what do you do? I sleep or hang out with friends. Yeah, it's just...
it's gotta, like, be so foreign to them.
Yeah, it's foreign to them. Yeah. Like, and then they start to get into a very intense conversation, like a debate about like why is it there should be a religion, you know? But
yeah,
then it's, you kind of learn their mindset and their way of thinking.
Yeah, you know? I mean, if you've never left your country and you never left that area, then that's all you know.
Oh, by the way, about leaving the countries, apparently Iranians, they can only travel to Muslim countries and certain countries like Thailand, Malaysia, or Middle East.
I hosted one in China.
Oh, really? You hosted one in China?
Yeah, she was really nice.
Yeah, I think probably they...
So China's okay for them, too.
Yeah. So...
But China's not a Christian country either, so maybe that's why.
Well, actually, talking about like Chinese influence in Iran, so I talked to the locals, like, and like the younger generation. Yeah, they said, well, we don't get any US products, we don't get any European products, but we do get those cheap, crappy Chinese goods.
So even though they know about Chinese cheap, crappy stuff.
No, but then, you know, now Chinese, they actually have a whole spectrum of stuff. They've got something really A grade, like top grade, you know, where you export to US or the Europe because they have like certain criterias. But Iran, they know they have no choice because they have embargo from like Europe and US. So the Chinese are taking advantage of that, and plus they have no choice, so they just have to have like crappy Chinese goods. They are pretty, like, really like low grade in a way, like the plastic, you can see the quality. And then they, and even like planes, you know, those planes are not EU like qualified.
Oh, to fly within Iran?
Yeah, those planes are very old, back in the 60s. And
did you fly any of them?
Yeah, I flew one of them. Within the whole trip of that 9 months, we only flew for 4 times. And one flight is an inter-city flight in Iran. Okay. So we thought, like, okay, flight, it's easier. So we took a flight. I need to wear hijab in the flight too. You know, I can't show because we are within the territory still, you know.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, no photos, nothing.
Right.
And the planes are really old, you know, and because when I look at the different compartments, there's still some Koreans writing. It's really old. Yeah, it was a Korea airplane. Yeah.
Oh, maybe it's from North Korea.
It's really old. Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. And did they serve you any food on this plane?
Oh yeah, but the food is like
that was okay.
It was good. I feel it's good because the yogurt, it's always good, you know, and always the good, lamb.
Oh,
it's good. Yeah, they have lamb.
Mm.
So, yeah, but mainly traveling, it's all men. So what I suggest for female traveling alone, it's safe, but you will get a lot of attention. You will have men interested to meet, to reach out to you, but you cannot shake their hands. They don't want to shake your hands.
Oh, no touching.
No touching. No touching in public. In, say, like private areas in their homes, they'll be very friendly, but then not even shake their hands. So I did it because I was with my ex-boyfriend, so I just pull out my hands and to be friendly.
Yeah.
No, it can't be done. Yeah.
I remember seeing a video of an American woman putting her hand out, and the guy, this was in Afghanistan actually, but same kind of thing. The guy took his clothes and put it over his hand,
yeah,
and so he wouldn't actually touch her hand.
Yeah.
And shook her hand like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, what do you suggest for females like to deal with all the attention?
Just
accept it, or do you cover up more, or? I mean, you were there with your boyfriend. Maybe that helps.
Yeah.
What do you suggest?
I guess, like, because they're still English speaking, I guess you just have to be friendly but cautious in certain ways, you know. But as a female traveling alone, I mean, you just have to pay more. I don't know, not necessarily females or male, but then you just have to be careful, open in a way that you know what's your boundaries. Yeah,
it's true. Yeah, traveling alone is very different than traveling with even one other person.
Yeah,
because you're much more open to interactions with people.
Yeah, but when I was I was walking around by myself, I do still meet some. I meet a lot of Iranian females as well. So, you know, as a female, you can still actually meet other females. And they're friendly too. They tend to have their women's quarters. So you get to meet them. And
you can meet men.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
But if you're a Western man, then no way you can meet the females, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, so you actually have an advantage in
exactly.
way.
Exactly. So, I mean, like, I mean, if you're... Iranian, if you are like a female traveler, you still get the chance to meet some, or maybe that's the starting point, you know, and they're very friendly, they're willing to take you around, you know, like take care of you, they are really
that's
nice,
fantastic.
Peaceful, yeah.
It's good to hear that, it's so nice and friendly and safe. But what about, you said you went to Iraq, or Kurdish Iraq, and by bus, right? Mm-hmm. Was it hard to get a visa to go there, or how did you do that?
It wasn't that hard, I recall. It wasn't that hard, yeah. Some reason, it's just because back at that time, it wasn't. And to be honest, when I work for my Chinese bank, I use my Hong Kong passport to actually, because we did actually finance some mines in like some mineral mines in Iraqi Kurdistan in Erbil. So I did actually went there for the second time.
Oh, you went back?
Yeah,
for
work, just through my bank, Chinese bank. It's not that hard, you know, to get a visa.
Is it the same visa for all of Iraq, or does the Kurdish part have their own visa?
It's Kurdish Park. So it's different from like, the other part of Iraq, it's an autonomous region.
Okay, and that includes their immigration and all of that.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, that sounds interesting. It's not like on my radar, you know, I'm not... I like going out there to wild places, and it sounds so interesting, even though I don't have any plans to go there. But I'll keep it in mind that
yeah,
might be interesting in the future.
Yeah, it's interesting and yeah.
We must be running low on time here. You had I think maybe my alarm didn't go off.
Oh, but we should go.
We have to send you off. You have to catch a flight to Hong Kong.
Yes, I'm going back, yes.
Okay. Well, thanks, Gigi. It's been really awesome.
Okay.
Thanks for talking with me. I really appreciate you taking the time to come out here. I know you have a flight, and we just met, so like, thanks again for coming, and I hope you have a great trip.
Yeah, happy to do so. You know, nowadays the world is so small, you never know. We'll meet somewhere someday.
I think we will. Thanks to Gigi Wong for coming on the show, and thank you for listening. If you're wondering how to support the show, the number one thing you can do at this point is simply tell a friend about it to help spread the word. Beyond that, if you want to subscribe on iTunes and leave me a review, I'd really appreciate it. And as usual, my website is 1000daysbetween.com. That's the number 1000daysbetween.com. I'm going to put up some show notes about this episode, maybe a few pictures of the places we talked about, and you can get a lot more info about me and my upcoming travels. We're going to be taking a year off, my wife and I, Katie. We're going to take a year off and go to, well, a long trip around Asia. We're getting really excited about it, kind of starting to hammer out the details, and I plan to continue this podcast along the way. So thanks for joining me, and I'll see you next time.